This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The government of Lebanon resigned earlier today among continuing protests in Beirut that stem from the assassination of former Lebanese Prime Minister Rafiq Hariri. Many in Lebanon believe Syria was responsible for the bomb that killed Hariri and 16 others in Beirut 2 weeks ago. The current Prime Minister, Omar Karami, announced the resignation of his government as the Lebanese parliament opened a debate on the Hariri killing. The assassination triggered unprecedented demonstrations. Just a few weeks ago, the idea that thousands would take to the streets to denounce the Syrian occupation was unthinkable. Today, opposition leaders in Beirut said that despite the resignation of the pro-Syrian government, protests would continue until Syria withdraws completely from Lebanon. At the same time, Syria is under pressure from Iraq. Yesterday, a half-brother of Saddam Hussein was among a group of men turned over to Iraq by Syria. From Israel, which says it has proof that last week's terror attack in Tel Aviv was directed by a group based in Damascus. From Jordan, Syria today resolved a long-running border dispute in Jordan's favor. And from the United States. Yesterday, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad said in an interview he believes Washington is preparing the ground for an attack on his country. Later in the program, novelist Charles Johnson joins us to talk about fiction and history. But first, Lebanon, Syria, and the U.S. If you have questions about what's happened, why, or about what happens next, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now from Lebanon is Lynn Neuhead, a reporter for Global Radio News. She's with us by phone from Beirut. Welcome.
Hello there.
What's the scene like there in Beirut today?
There are scenes of jubilation in downtown Beirut on Martyr Square, where demonstrators had gathered overnight to circumvent a government ban on protests to demand that Syrians leave Lebanon and for the government to resign. So that when the protesters heard the news, the resignation, the parliament debate was beamed live on huge screens, on TV screens, in the square where the protesters had gathered. They just burst into applause. Everybody was hugging each other, broke into singing the national anthem, scenes of just jubilation.
Some people have drawn comparisons to the scenes in Kiev not that long ago, the Orange Revolution.
Right. A lot of the protesters here would like to, saw the Kiev protests as a sort of model for them, and they were hoping that they could basically do the same thing and, you know, impose the people's will by constant protests. And we have seen constant protests since the assassination of Rafiq al-Hariri 2 weeks ago. The government has tried time and time again to prevent people from gathering, to stop the protests, but they've just been unable to. People have just been too determined, and they've always found a way to gather. So, but most of them say they will not go home today. They say the resignation of the government was just one of the demands. They say they'll stay in the square, and they'll continue to gather until the Syrians withdraw from Lebanon and until they know who killed Rafiq al-Hariri.
Now, there had been a vote of no confidence scheduled today in Parliament. The government had been expected to survive that easily. This resignation, was it a surprise?
It was definitely a surprise. A lot of the protesters were shocked. They'd expected, they'd called for a vote of no confidence, but they had not expected to win it because pro-Syrian loyalists outnumbered the opposition members in parliament. So we had expected after the no confidence debate broke for lunch for it to just continue for more MPs to make their speeches and criticize the government and for that debate to end with a vote of confidence in the government. But when they returned from their lunch break, Prime Minister Omar Karami took the podium immediately to offer the government's resignation. People had not been expecting that at all.
Now, I didn't mean to cut you off, but as I understand it, what happens now in the Lebanese parliamentary system is that the Karami government stays on as a caretaker while a new prime minister is sought?
That's right. The president has accepted the government's resignation, but has asked it to stay on as a caretaker government. And it's not clear how long it will be before a new government is set up. What usually happens in Lebanon is that the parliament appoints a prime minister who chooses the members of his new cabinet. It's really not clear how long that will take. Of course, a lot of people had actually been against the resignation of the government because there are no clear replacements. I mean, there aren't any consensus candidates to replace Omar Karami as prime minister because the country is so divided at the moment.
This does not mean new elections, though.
No, it will mean a government will be set up, a new government will be set up to carry the country through until parliamentary elections, which are scheduled for the end of April or the beginning of May in any case. And with a new parliament will come a new government anyway. So whatever government is going to be set up now will only be temporary. Its mandate will only last a couple of months until parliamentary elections.
Now, as you mentioned earlier, people had arrived in Martyrs Square very early to avoid the ban on the demonstrations that had been issued by the government. From what we've been reading in accounts from Beirut, the security forces who are supposed to be enforcing this ban are not exactly being vigorous in opposition.
They're not. I mean, they are present in very large numbers, but they have not. They've held back. They've restrained themselves. They've not used any force or been rough at all with the protesters. The protesters themselves have actually been trying to win the sort of support, in a way, of the army by chanting slogans saying, like, "We only want the Lebanese army in Lebanon," and actually been, you know, chanting slogans in support of the Lebanese army, saying they should be the only ones in Lebanon and not the Syrians, which put the army in a bit of a difficult position. It wasn't really, you know, the soldiers weren't really inclined to be very rough with the protesters. And they had been actually letting a lot of them through the cordons.
It sounds like you've got another editor on the other line, Lynn. Thanks very much. We'll let you go. Lynn Noahead is a reporter for Global Radio News and joined us on the phone from Beirut. With us now to help us sort through this latest development is Rami Khoury, editor-at-large for Beirut's Daily Star, a newspaper that is based in Lebanon. He normally joins us from Beirut. He's with us today on a U.S. tour from Michigan. Rami, good to have you on the program, as always.
Nice to be with you. Thanks.
Earlier today, Walid Jumblatt, the Druze and now opposition leader, said this is a turning point for the history of our country. How big a deal is this?
Oh, it's a very big deal. But the actual turning point was back in September when the mandate of the Lebanese president was extended for 3 years under strong Syrian influence. And that really pushed the opposition, especially Jumblatt and a few other people, really pushed them onto a new level of resistance and defiance and objecting to the Syrian presence in Lebanon. And then the killing of Hariri took it, it was the straw that broke the camel's back and took it to this new level now of mass popular mobilization. This is a very significant movement. The opposition people in Lebanon have been acting quite, responsibly and carefully. They know that they have a lot of support among the people and international support, but they also know that the Syrian government and the Lebanese government can push back if they want to. So they're navigating this process step by step, and getting the prime minister to resign is a major milestone.
Among the chants today in Martyrs Square after the resignation of the government is Lahoud, you're next. That, of course, a reference to Emil Lahoud, the pro-Syrian president of Lebanon.
Yes, I think that's clear that they're taking it one step at a time. This government had to resign because it just simply was incompetent in terms of providing the security and having any kind of credibility. And it stemmed from a context in which the president's term was extended. So the whole thing was reeked with illegitimacy. The next step is probably going to be to form a government of national unity that's credible, that has all the major Lebanese groups represented. They can then come up with a good electoral law that's fair and not too much gerrymandering of districts to set the stage for an honest election of parliament in April or May. And my guess is that the next step after that will be to pressure Lahoud to resign. because he is seen to be a man with only limited legitimacy now, and he really has very little impact. He's been kind of an invisible president. So I think these things will come one step at a time, but they have to be done carefully and slowly, because you want change, but you also want orderly change. You don't want to reignite any kind of internal tensions in Lebanon or to set off a battle with the Syrians. So I think it's a process that is bringing out the best in the Lebanese political class.
Our number, if you'd like to join our conversation, is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Email us, TOTN at NPR.org. Shannon joins us from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. This is probably the typical question that's going to come up. I know that Lebanon used to be about 50-50 Muslim Christian, or somewhere close to that, and I know a lot of Christians have left. What is the makeup, religiously or otherwise, of the opposition?
And there are a bunch of other groups in there as well, of course, Rami Khoury.
Yeah, there's 18 different confessional groups that are represented with formal seats and shares of power in the parliament and the executive branch, in the bureaucracy and in the armed forces. Historically, the Maronites dominated.
Those are Christians.
The Christian Maronites dominated. But in recent years, after the Civil War and the Taif Agreement, there has been a 50-50 balance between Christians and Muslims. There is probably a slight Muslim majority in the country now. And this is one of the issues that Lebanon has to resolve looking to the future, and it's an issue that's also current in Iraq. Do you set up a government system which formally gives people a certain fixed share of power in parliament and the executive, or do you let people vote and let the citizenry decide by voting? These are important issues, and they cut to the heart of the governance dilemma that challenges most Arab countries.
Well, I have Shannon, that's a good question, and I have a follow-up about which groups are in the opposition, but we're going to have to punt that until after we come back from the break. Okay, Shannon?
Thank you, Neil.
Thanks for the call. More with Rami Khoury of the Daily Star, and we'll also be joined by a former U.S. ambassador to Syria, Ted Katouf, will be with us here in Studio 3A. When we come back, of course, we'll be taking more of your calls as well. 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address again, TOTN at NPR.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking about today's sudden resignation of the pro-Syrian government in Lebanon. Of course, you're invited to join us. Our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN at NPR.org. At the White House just a few moments ago, a spokesman welcomed the resignation of Lebanon's pro-Syrian prime minister and his government, saying it opens the door for new elections that would be free of all foreign interference. We are closely watching developments with great interest. White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan said the resignation of the Karami government represents an opportunity for the Lebanese people to have a new government that is truly representative of their country's diversity. And Rami Khoury of Beirut's Daily Star, is the opposition representative of the country?
It's representative of the opposition, which probably represents, I would say, 60-70% of the country, a huge portion of the population. And it includes many of the Christian Maronite groups. Now it has the Walid Jumblatt and the Druze, the Socialist Party. And the killing of Hariri pushed a lot of Sunni Muslims to now become critical of Syria. And then there's a scattered group of people, civil society activists, Democrats, human rights activists, etc. So you have a lot of people in the opposition. The important thing about the opposition is the clarity and the intensity of its calls now, and this is really what is significant, is that they've crossed the threshold of fear in talking about the Syrian government and the Syrian military presence. And this takes away the prospect of using force against them, either by Syrians or the Lebanese government. So I think the trajectory is clear. You're going to have mass mobilization, peaceful demonstrations for a peaceful evolution. That's the best scenario. But the Syrians are also showing signs that they understand the pressures being brought to bear on them because of Iraq, Israel, Palestine, Lebanon. So the Syrians also are people who know how to play this game, and they want to survive, and so they're going to start making adjustments, which they have, and with helping the Americans in Iraq, pulling out of Lebanon slowly. I think the Syrians will play ball, just enough to reduce the pressure on them and to make sure that they stay in power in Damascus.
Joining us now is a former ambassador to Syria, Theodore Katouf. He's currently the president and CEO of Amid East, a nonprofit organization that aims to strengthen cooperation between the U.S., the Middle East, and North Africa. He's with us here in Studio 3A. Mr. Ambassador, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen.
Obviously, you spent a lot of time in Syria. Do you agree with Rami Kouri that they're going to be playing ball in the next few weeks?
Well, I think Mr. Kouri is right that Syria has made some gestures towards the U.S., the turning over of a wanted fugitive, the half-brother of Saddam Hussein, and a number of his cohorts represent a peace offering from Syria. Also, the president of Syria has talked about redeploying forces further into the Bekaa out of population centers. But the Syrians still have not indicated they're ready to quit Lebanon. Maybe that's understandable because they see it perhaps as a bargaining chip. One thing that concerns me, however, that has not been mentioned is Syrian Iranian influence with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is a very formidable, disciplined force in Lebanon, both in the southern suburbs of Beirut and in south Lebanon. They are separate and apart from the Lebanese military. They are supplied and funded by Iran with Syrian complicity. And a lot of Lebanese are very concerned that Syria not get out in a way that reignites a civil war in Lebanon.
And Rami Kouri, Hezbollah has been noticeable by its absence from the current conversations in Lebanon since the assassination of Prime Minister Hariri.
Yes, they have. They obviously want to be on good terms with Syria. They have been for some time, and it's a mutually beneficial relationship. They use the Syrians for the link with Iran, and the Syrians use them to play military footsies with Israel and keep the tension up and down. So it's a relationship that has served them both. But Hezbollah really is the Syrians need Hezbollah more than Hezbollah needs the Syrians, I think, in the long run. And what Hezbollah does in the next month or so will be crucial in terms of how Lebanon moves internally. And they have not made it clear what they want to do right now. They've stayed pretty quiet and made it clear that they're going to more or less stay with the Lebanese government and the Syrians. But now with Karami's resignation, if the balance of power is shifting, as the great American philosopher Bob Dylan said, you don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. And I think Hezbollah is very good at reading weather patterns. And my guess is that they will try to play a constructive role and help make an evolution within Lebanon and between Lebanon and Syria that is peaceful but also real. But we'll have to see how this goes now.
And let me ask both of you, we did see today, perhaps coincidentally, a concession to Jordan on a long-running border dispute by the Syrians. We did see the handover of that half-brother of Saddam Hussein to the Iraqis. We've yet to see a crackdown against the anti-Syrian demonstrations in Beirut. Ambassador Katouf, could this be seen as weakness by the authoritarian government, by Bashar al-Assad in Damascus?
Well, first of all, I think any authoritarian regime, certainly in the Arab world, fears people coming out into the streets. Because when people come out into the streets, you don't have a lot of good choices. Either you can have security forces beat their heads bloody or fire on them, or you can appear weak and allow them to carry out their demonstrations. I think the Syrians and the Lebanese government made the right choice in not confronting the demonstrators today or earlier. And I hope they continue to respect their rights to demonstrate.
Mm-hmm. But Rami Kouri, at the same time, are people in Damascus asking questions now?
I think so. I mean, the Syrians are really, I mean, this is really all about Syria. It's not really about Lebanon. The Americans don't care that much about Lebanon. I think they do at a certain level, but they really want to pressure Syria for Syria's assistance in Iraq and also with vis-a-vis Israel and the Palestinian groups fighting Israel and Hezbollah. So it's much more about Syria and changing the policy of the regime in Syria, and Lebanon has been a convenient instrument for the U.S. to use. There's big differences between the Americans, say, and the French and the Lebanese opposition positions on a lot of issues, such as disarming Hezbollah, working with the Americans in Iraq, or the Arab-Israeli peace process. So I think the Syrians are getting the message. They understand how serious it is now. They didn't get the message for some time, and I think they're starting to figure out what is the best combination of flexibility standing your ground, which will guarantee in the end the only thing that matters, which is their incumbency. And I think you're going to see some continued moves by the Syrians. The trouble they have is that if they get out of Lebanon and they're seen to be responding too much to Lebanese and foreign pressure, that their own credibility as the regime in Damascus will be undermined, and they might then face pressures from within their own people at home.
Let's get another caller on the line. Richard is with us from Garrettsville, Ohio.
Hello there. I am an anti-Bush person. However, I want to be fair. Do you think the recent situations in Egypt, Israel, and now here in Lebanon can be credited with George Bush's overall foreign policy?
Ambassador Katouf?
Well, I agree. We ought to be fair. And while the Bush administration may have gone into Iraq for reasons that proved less than sound, the president's commitment to democratic reform in the Middle East is starting to resonate. When public opinion polls are taken of Arabs, one of the reasons they dislike the U.S. is because they believe the U.S. has helped to prop up a number of authoritarian regimes over the years at their expense. So despite their strong dislike of our policies in the Palestinian areas and in Iraq, I think the Bush administration does get some credit. But also the brave people who came out to vote in the Iraqi elections, the Palestinians conducting a fair election, and now the Lebanese out in the streets ultimately are the ones who are driving this process.
Yeah, Rami Khoury, just last week, I think Waleed Jumblatt, the Druze Socialist Party leader, gave an interview in which he said that he equated the Iraqi election as to the fall of the Berlin Wall in Middle East terms.
I think that's a little bit of hyperbole. I think there is an impact that the American moves in Iraq is probably having at some level, but I think to be fair all around, that the impetus for democratic change, good governance, ending corruption and abuse of power has come deeply from within Arab society. There's been people in the Arab world working for several decades for democracy and freedom while the American government was feeding the tyrants and the oppressive regime. So I think there's a coincidence here of two things that are going on simultaneously. American foreign military intervention and diplomatic pressures, Iraq, Syria, other places, to push this process. And at the same time, this has converged with a much deeper and older movement, but less effective movement from within the Arab world, people wanting more democratic and accountable governance system. I think our challenge is to merge these two into one and for Arabs and Americans to stop arguing about the past, but to say, all right, we now have something we agree on. And the way that the U.S. worked with France, I mean, my gosh, France of all people, the U.S. and France worked together at the U.N. Security Council to push Resolution 1559 last September, which pressured the Syrians in Lebanon. And that was seen to be credible and legitimate and had an impact. So I think we see a model now of how Europeans, Arabs, and Americans can work together through the U.N. as well as bilaterally to achieve these common goals. And I hope that's how things move.
Richard, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Let's talk now with Ali. Ali is with us from Boston.
Hi, Neil. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Considering that it was actually Iran that started all this Islamic movement since 1979 with the regime in power right now in Iran, and also keeping in mind with polls and polls that's been taken in even with the Iranian government about how pro-U.S. are the population in Iran, isn't this about time to actually move to the next stage and push for democratic reform within Iran?
Biting off, I'm not sure it's more than anybody can chew, but it certainly looks that way, Ambassador.
Well, I believe this administration has been trying to encourage the demonstrators in Tehran and elsewhere in the country, and that the administration would very much like to see the authoritarian theocratic regime in Iran gone. But they do have their support, and they have the guns. And ultimately, I think a lot depends on the willingness of these authoritarian regimes to confront their own people with force and violence. Unfortunately, we've been shown in the past that force and violence work if you're totally ruthless, as Saddam Hussein was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure the Iraqis would have got around to removing Saddam at any point without outside assistance.
Ali, thanks very much for the
call. Thank you very much, yeah.
And Rami Khoury, I know we have to let you go shortly, but I did want to ask you, it looks like you're going to have a pretty interesting election there in Lebanon in the next couple of months.
Yeah, I think it's going to be an important test case at several levels. First, can they write an election law that is really free and fair and honest? I think they will be able to because the pressures are so strong. Second of all, will they hold the free and fair election? And then when that happens, will the new government be able to institute really serious reform policies and renegotiate a relationship with Syria that is mutually beneficial, restores full Lebanese sovereignty, but also recognizes the special relationship between Syria and Lebanon? My own sense, I'm not Lebanese, I'm Palestinian-Jordanian, but I live in Lebanon. So as I watch Lebanon, I am deeply inspired by what the Lebanese people are doing. I think it's very powerful. They've crossed a threshold of fear here, and the Lebanese people are standing up against strong odds and demanding to live in freedom and dignity. And it's fascinating that there's two links with two other people. They called their movement the Intifada for Independence. They took a term from the Palestinian resistance to Israeli occupation, a fearless resistance. And they also used the word kifaya, which is enough, which they took from the Egyptian movement, a small movement that has been standing up in the last 3-4 months to the Egyptian president, saying enough of the president running for 4 and 5 terms in a row and having his son take over. So you have the Lebanese, the Egyptians, and the Palestinians united in a very powerful movement that is still at the grassroots level, but I think is deeply inspiring and should be recognized as such by the rest of the world. And all of these things started well before the Americans moved into Iraq, by the way. So I think it's important to give credit to that process.
Rami Khoury, editor-at-large for Beirut's Daily Star, joined us on the line from Michigan. He's currently on an American visit. Thanks very much, Rami.
Thanks for having me.
Bye. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Ted Katouf, the former U.S. ambassador to Syria, is still with us. Let's get another caller on the line. This is Sana. Sana's calling from San Francisco. Hello.
Hi, yes. I'm calling, I'm a Syrian American, and I just wanted to say that what is happening in Jordan is a wonderful thing. I think that the Syrians have been in Lebanon for far too long.
I think Sana's cell phone has left us, but we thank her for her phone call. Let's see if we can get somebody else on the line, and this would be Marvin. Marvin's calling from Philadelphia.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
One of the main reasons of the Lebanese civil war is the unfair constitution, such as all the main offices are held based on people's sex. As for instance, the president has to be a Christian Maronite, the prime minister is a Sunni Muslim, and the speaker of the parliament is a Shia, and the police commissioner is a Sunni, and so on and so forth. And that was one of the main facts that the civil war broke out. Now, we could talk about, I'm by no reason pro-Syrian or for the Syrian to stay in Lebanon, but what's a guarantee that another civil war is not going to break out?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
when are the Lebanese people going to wake up and rewrite the constitution that anyone, regardless of their beliefs, sex, or whatsoever, could run directly for a public office? And why should the president be elected by the parliament instead of being elected directly by the people?
Mm-hmm. And one of the big complaints during the Civil War was that those structures were no longer reflected the actual population of Lebanon. Ambassador, has Marvin got a point here?
He has a point, but I'm sure that there are others who could argue very well the opposite. The fact of the matter is that Lebanon is a very delicate patchwork or mosaic, if you will, of 18 religious groups, obviously the major groups being Muslim, Sunni, and Shia, Druze minority, and then Christian, Maronites, Orthodox, etc. And while this dividing offices by confessional or sex may be an anachronism, it's an anachronism that worked for a long time before there was a lot of foreign interference.
Now, let me just say, we're on the radio, sex, S-E-C-T-S.
Exactly.
Right.
Don't want to get in trouble with the FCC here.
Right.
So I'll leave that for the Lebanese to sort out. That's a hard question for outsiders to answer.
Marvin, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Ambassador Katouf, we appreciate your time today. Theodore Katouf, a former ambassador from the United States to Syria, joined us here in Studio 3A. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nick.
Mr. Katouf, now president and CEO of Amid East, a nonprofit organization aimed at cooperation between the U.S., the Middle East, and North Africa. When we come back from a short break, author Charles Johnson joins us to talk about the use of fiction to tell African-American history. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.